Welcome to Safety Spectrum, your environmental health and safety connection. This program is a presentation of the Michigan Safety Conference. For almost a century, the annual conference has provided credible educational opportunities and valuable support to the safety and health practitioner by offering 120 instructional programs along with exhibits highlighting the latest in safety equipment, instrumentation, and demonstrations. To learn more about the conference, please find us at michsafetyconference.org. Welcome to Safety Spectrum. I'm your host, Sheila Ide. This program is sponsored by the Michigan Safety Conference, and our topic today is going beyond the standards. When evaluating a safety and health program, how does the EHS professional consider the applicable rules, standards, disciplines, and agencies that may impact their industry? Greg Zagulis, certified safety professional and certified industrial hygienist, has over 38 years of safety, health, and environmental experience within several different industries and areas of focus, and he began his own consulting company in 2015. Greg has worked for several types of organizations in an EHS capacity to include an Air Force captain and within construction management, construction safety, and construction fatality research, disaster restoration, Department of Energy, Gas Engine Manufacturing, and Tier 1 Auto Parts Manufacturing. He's worked under contracts to Federal OSHA and has a solid regulatory compliance background, but also is very familiar with several consensus standards as he serves on ANSI-ASSP Z10 Committee on Occupational Safety and Health Management Systems and U.S. TAG for ISO TC-283 Occupational Health and Safety System Management Systems, as well as the ANSI-ASSP Z590.3 Committee for Prevention Through Design, Guidelines Addressing Occupational Hazards and Risks in Design and Redesign Processes. Greg recently wrote a chapter of the Safety Professionals Handbook, 3rd edition, about the Z10 standard, authored and co-authored articles for ASSP's Professional Safety Magazine to include the integration of safety into business processes. In November of 2023, he presented a webinar for OHS Magazine on the topic of OSHA's top 10 most frequently cited standards in fiscal year 2023, along with suggestions for how to manage safety that goes beyond just compliance and regulations. And Greg will also be a speaker at the Michigan Safety Conference in April. So what do you do in your spare time, Greg? Not much.
I love my job. How about if I say that?
got to say that. So let's grab the, first of all, why don't you talk a little bit about your company?
So I worked for others as an internal EHS resource for most of my career, and then converted to start consulting in 2015, which has gone very well. And I wish I'd started that sooner, but I help organizations. Right now, I focus on helping organizations, usually small and middle-sized enterprises, to conduct gap analyses, sort of look where they're at from both a regulatory compliance and consensus standard or best practice standpoint, if that's what they're looking for, and help them with implementation of programs and systems, as well as conducting other special purpose things like risk assessments, industrial hygiene monitoring, and other things like that.
And it's usually the small and middle-sized companies that can't really afford the full-time safety EHS professionals. So that is a niche that needs to be filled, absolutely. So let's grab the initiative. Based on your experience in both regulatory and safety management areas, what do you believe is the difference in programs focused towards regulatory compliance or one based on consensus-based standards?
Well, organizations need fundamentally to comply with regulatory requirements. But there are the regulations, and then there are also consensus standards that exist that can help give organizations an idea of what other information is out there in industry, what are some best practices that have been identified, what are some ways to go about doing things. And so, to your question, I think that organizations that focus purely on regulatory compliance might be missing some opportunities to not only help keep their employees safe, but to do other things that can go beyond that. when you start looking at some of the conformance standards or the consensus standards that are out there, companies can get an idea of other information, other things that are known, other methods of helping to keep people safe, and sometimes even giving companies a bit of a roadmap to follow. And if they implement a consensus standard, the ones I am typically working with, those are intended to certainly help with compliance and regulatory, you know, following regulatory requirements. But additionally, organizations can improve not only in safety, the traditional metrics for safety, but also in other business areas. So I think a great approach for many organizations is, you know, to not only pay attention to the regulatory requirements, but also to look at some of the consensus standards that are out there.
Well, you really need both, because they're kind of hand in glove. A lot of them, standards probably came from consensus or SOPs from before the rules are put in place, is what I would guess. And they seem to be changing all the time as well.
So, right. Well, of course, when the OSHA regulations were first created through the OSHA Act, the government, OSHA was given the mandate to create standards. And so at that time, they looked to the consensus standards and things like that to help develop those very first regulations. Now, since that point in time, OSHA has different methods that they need to follow to implement newer revised standards. But right, that's where they originally came from. And to your point, not only do the regulations change periodically, but of course, the consensus standards do as well. And in fact, consensus standards usually have a requirement to either be reviewed and updated, or basically confirmed as is or revised on a multi-year schedule.
Is it working or not working, I guess. So realizing that we need to follow the laws, what do you believe to be some of the most important OSHA or state OSHA regs that are universally important, and how do we go about identifying those rules?
Well, I think that there are some standards that apply across industries, and there are some standards that apply, if you're talking about regulations now, and there are some that apply to particular types of processes, which is often referred to as a vertical standard. So the horizontal standards are those which would apply across a broad range, and the vertical would apply to particular kinds of activities or business processes. So some of the ones that apply more or less across the board would include things like for injury and illness record keeping, or hazard communication, things like that. But then again, there are some kinds of issues that span across different industries as well that people can pay attention to. So for example, fall protection. There are construction standards for fall protection. There are general industry standards for fall protection. And even within construction, the requirements are going to vary depending upon whether you're talking about, all right, is someone working off a leading edge? Is someone on, you know, on steel, subject to the steel erection standards? Are they on a scaffold? So there are those considerations. So it's hard to say that there's just one type or a select few that are most important. It's really more a matter of organizations needing to look at where their risk factors are. Well, it's a combination of looking at what regulations exist for their industry, but also looking at where their hazards are, where their risks are, and then developing some form of appropriate system to make sure that the proper programs or procedures or systems are in place.
And as you say, work practices change, standing operating procedures change. They find a better way to do something. A larger company may have tried things at work that smaller companies can take advantage of. So that would kind of lead, we kind of talked about it, but how do consensus standards relate to actual law? And as we pointed out earlier, a lot of the laws came from those consensus standards, but they're changing all the time. Based on work.
Right. So there are a number of consensus standards that are, of course, what they call incorporated by reference into the regulations. But sometimes standards that are incorporated into the regulations are updated more quickly than the regulations are.
For sure.
So it makes sense to look at those consensus standards and work with your organization to determine what levels of risk it is willing and wanting to accept and then to manage appropriately. You know, sometimes consensus standards can actually work so quickly that they can be difficult for organizations to even attempt to implement. Other times they can be completely spot on. And I think they need to be looked at case by case, because when the consensus standards are written, even though they are intended to apply across industries, usually, it can also be the case that they're written somewhat broadly to give the end reviewer an opportunity to review the content and to determine how to best conform to the requirements for their company, their culture, their business climate.
I guess this is a good time to say that the standards, the regulations, are a minimum standard. It should always be considered a minimum standard. You should go above and beyond that.
Right. And I think that it's not always considered clear cut by some people who read some of the consensus standards, but really compliance with the regulatory requirements is considered to be a bare minimum for then implementing a broader range of other things that an organization might want to do as part of implementing one of these other occupational health and safety management systems.
And then you mentioned fall protection earlier, and I can remember back in the day, there weren't a lot of tie-offs for people up on roofs. So consequently, you had a lot of folks, maybe not in the larger companies, but the smaller companies, even today, that still don't understand tie-offs and fall protection and that sort of thing. Though the industry is changing, where they're starting to build tie-off points to the buildings when they put them up, from what I understand. So
right, they're well, that's sort of a prevention through design concept, even.
There you go.
Right. So people are starting to look at a construction process, whether for a building, a facility, a sub process, and looking at the life cycle of it, and looking at not only how to best accomplish the construction or installation safely, but also thinking about the safety of later end users of the product. How about people working in high rises who need to clean windows and have some safe means of doing that, or people who, you know, perform other types of cleaning and maintenance services where there are special things that should be considered based on the design of the structure.
Exactly.
And the processes.
So switching gears a little bit, I understand you're involved in two different consensus standard committees related to the occupational health and safety management systems. Could you explain them further and their value for EHS?
Sure. Well, I'm involved in both the ANSI ASSP Z10 standard for occupational health and safety management systems and the tag to ANSI for TC283, which is a group that was responsible for producing ISO 45001 and family of standards. Both of them are intended to be to provide users with a framework for what a whole bunch of experts think of as a model program, steps that can be taken, things that can be done in order for an organization to successfully implement and manage an occupational health and safety management system. A lot of the content from the Z10 standard, one prior version, actually wound up getting incorporated into the ISO 45001. So it was a real source of information for the 45001. What organizations can do, you know, by using these standards is help make sure that they are not only complying with regulations, even though the intent of these standards is not just to help an organization comply with regulation, but implementing these frameworks and practices can help the organization to comply, because there are obligations to have things in place that will help make sure that the company, the organization, does comply. But then there are so many other good ideas and things that people can tie into in these management system standards that, again, not only can help with compliance, but can really help organizations get to kind of a higher plane, if you will.
And I'm sure, I know you're familiar with the Voluntary Protection Program, and Michigan has a state plan for that. And it was noted that companies that could meet the five elements of a safety and health management system, management commitment, employee involvement, training, you know, the five elements, they do have a better safety record. And the people that work there understand that this is a better company to work for. And things go a lot better when you have that kind of program in place. So safety health management systems have been around for a while, and the companies that use them have found that it really makes a difference in their overall incident rate.
Right. Well, so VPP is a great example of a management system framework that has definitely helped companies. Rumor has it that you had some kind of involvement in the past in Michigan, Sheila, but...
Yes, that was part of my OSHA life. Yep. Working with the VPP program. Absolutely. So I'm a big proponent of it. Yes.
There's VPP. There are guidance documents from the National Safety Council. OSHA has some really excellent program management guidelines, both for general industry and for construction. But the thing is, what's different between some of those things and the Z10 and the ISO 45001 is that the Z10 and 45001 provide a complete framework with a whole lot of background and supplemental information, especially for the Z10. It's a complete suite of things. And the ISO 45001 standard actually was the first international occupational health and safety management system standard. The OSAS 18001 had existed as a British standard, and a lot of companies had implemented OSAS 18001, but it wasn't it didn't come from the International Standards Organization, and it's not considered to have been on the same plane necessarily.
So do you recommend one over another, or what are the differences basically?
So I've spoken to a number of companies over time that really look at the two because they want to improve their programs and processes, and they've asked the same question. I think there are different and unique considerations for each. And for some companies, Z10 might be a better choice. And for other companies, the ISO 45001 might be the best choice. One of the things that really drives the ISO 45001 demand, if you will, is international supply chains. where purchasing departments require that their suppliers actually literally implement and obtain certification to ISO 45001. But the ISO 45001 standard itself, while it has some good content, it was also written for an international audience. So sometimes, well, I forget how many countries were involved. I think it was 79 countries were involved in putting together that language. So some of the language is a little bit more vague. There were some considerations for how wording of a particular type might be interpreted in a particular country. And in some cases, that even has become law. So with the Z10 standard, what we were able to do in the U.S. for the U.S. version of Z10 is write a standard with much more of a U.S. audience in mind. Didn't have to be quite as concerned for end implications in terms of whether it will become a regulation or not, because it's not. It's a consensus standard. And it is also written in a way that I think is very responsive to a lot of, and considerations that a lot of US-based companies would have. So it's written very well, very useful, readable language. And there is also a lot of background guidance documentation that's available with it. So if a company is not sure they want to go one way or the other, maybe at some point they would like to obtain 45001 certification, they could actually start with the Z10 approach, read from it, learn from it. And basically by doing that, you're probably getting 80% of the way towards having something in place that could conform to ISO 45001 if at some point they wanted to take that extra step.
So 79 cooks in the kitchen aren't going to make a recognizable standard? Is that what you're saying? 79 interpretations?
No, I didn't mean it that way. And there are also other guidance documents as part of that series that pertain to auditing ISO programs. There are other guidance documents pertaining to infectious diseases and infectious disease control and other things. So it is a good international product. There is some very good content. It's just written in a different way. Whereas with the Z10, we were able to approach the writing, the development, the communication, the sharing in a different way that I think can be very, very helpful to a lot of companies. And sometimes there are some discussions about size of company and, is there a size of organization that can best benefit from one of these? And really the standards are written to be applicable to across industries and for organizations of different sizes. But I do think the reality is that there are some resources that are needed in order to read and digest and help set the wheels in motion for implementing one of these. And so we actually have some guidance documentation that's available for free through the American Society of Safety Professionals that is focused for or developed with small and medium-sized enterprises in mind. And what that document does is helps a smaller organization be able to say, okay, we might not have resources to take a full standard and go full bore to completely implement a conforming program, but We want to move there stepwise. We certainly are not happy with where we're at. We want to have continual improvement. They could look at that document. They can find out basically where they're at now from a management system standpoint and get suggestions on things they can do to stepwise improve their system, improve their approach.
Exactly. That makes sense. That when you have nothing, something helps.
or somewhere in between.
Yeah, somewhere in between. Just it gives you a guideline, gives you guidance, and it gives you a measurement of where you are compared to other organizations and what has been tried and worked, you know. So that's kind of the idea. I remember with the whole safety data sheet thing, we had to make it international so that everybody was talking the same lingo. I mean, eons ago, but trying to make it standardized is very difficult. But if you're dealing, like you say, internationally, you have to have those kind of conversations and that kind of clearance. So interesting. You were also on the ASSP committee for standard referred to as prevention through design. So could you explain what that's all about?
Sure. The prevention through design concept is basically that if an organization is going to, say, build something new or bring in a new process or modify and upgrade something, that, you know, it's easier, it's most cost effective for the organization, as well as truly most effective from a implementation standpoint, to consider safety way up front. Safety, health, environmental considerations way up front in the design processes, and look at the potential hazards associated with what an organization might want to bring in new or change, and determine how to best evaluate its risks and determine what kind of control factors it should have in place or wants to have in place way up front, and as well sort of integrated along with the process of, you know, maybe there are multiple engineering drawings and plans and approvals and steps to implement things. Lots of manufacturing organizations have special requirements for how new processes have to get constructed, tested, pieces manufactured, tested, and so it's helpful to integrate safety along that process. If you wait till, unfortunately, everything's already designed, installed, and operational, and then someone says, oh, hey, I'm sorry, you safety, health, and environmental, sorry, we forgot to include you, but I think we've captured everything. Well, maybe they have, maybe they haven't. Right. But if you discover there are changes needed at that point, it just becomes much more difficult to obtain the finances, to interrupt process flows, and to make those changes that are needed at that time, as well as being a heck of a lot more expensive.
I was just going to say, retrofit is always more expensive. I got a reputation for coming in after they installed something and go, well, you got to guard that and you got to do this. And I was not too popular, but I think they learned to be involved in the purchasing process and the engineering process, the design process. It was just much easier and safer. So
I've been there as well. I've needed to, or been made aware of things sometimes later in the process. And unfortunately, sometimes when people say, well, you know, we'll have to just make do for now. Uh-huh. That doesn't always work. It's not always acceptable. And or something like, well, when we make money off this process, now we can go back. Well, that they just never comes, or it's not acceptable to manage it that way.
It's not safe. So why do you believe this topic is important now? Why do you think it's important to talk about safety management systems and standards or going above and beyond? I think when we talked earlier, you said there's a lot of noise about safety programs, but, you know.
Well, I think that there's a lot of information floating out there. And if you're working in the health, safety, environmental community, if you're connected to social media, if you're getting industry publications, even attend conferences, sometimes there's a lot of emphasis on someone's pet approach to how to implement health and safety, or someone might feel that you know, there's just one right way to do this, or there's just one right way to do that because we've got this unique proprietary process that, or something along those lines. And I think the reality is that there are a lot of ways that a health and safety program or system can be implemented. And there are a lot of ways that, you know, they might be halfway equivalent. Now, there are a few ways that are definitely the wrong way to approach it, I think. But there are many ways that you could approach it. And I think that by looking at these standards, that interested organizations can get a real solid framework and basis for the kinds of things that really make the most sense for an organization to implement without that special, you know, without some consultant's twist on it or
flavor of the month, huh?
Flavor of the month type approach.
So we kind of went all over the place with the regulations and systems and what works in it. We're probably making it more complicated than it needs to be, but what kind of final thoughts do you have? How can we sum this up? Is it really that complicated?
I don't think that safety management, well, actually, I would like to interject a point here that I think could be important to people. And that is that, you know, there's organizations can implement programs piecemeal. They can implement things because, oh, OSHA says I've got to implement a hazard communication program. Okay, I'll do that. OSHA says we've got to implement a fall protection program. Okay, I'll do that. Those are examples of implementing programs that would be just plain intended to be responsive to OSHA requirements. That's implementing a safety procedure or implementing a safety policy. It's not the same thing as thinking about health and safety as a whole for the organization and thinking of things as being really part of a system. And there's an old saying that's been attributed to Leonardo da Vinci about really how everything is related to everything else. It's hard to make a change in one thing and not have it be impacting another thing, or that potential at least exists. So what I recommend to people is, rather than try to implement your programs just purely on a compliance basis, to certainly put something together that can comply, but think about how the elements are interrelated and think about things in more of a systemic way. Which is not to say that every organization of every size has to go implement some huge, you know, 5-inch thick health and safety policy manual that's going to sit on somebody's shelf somewhere. That's not at all what I mean. I'm just suggesting that programs, policies, decisions, risks can be interrelated. We should think of it that way. We should take that into account.
And I think that's your message too, is that integrate it into the business. It's not separate. Safety is not separate. It's integrated into this. It affects everything else. Everything is integrated.
Thank you for pointing that out. That was part of what I was hoping to get to, is that actually by implementing an occupational health and safety management system, that you're given a bit of a framework that helps the organization integrate health, safety, and environmental processes into other things that are part of the mainstream of the business. And I think that's one of the greatest benefits of implementing one of these.
Absolutely. Systems. Absolutely. Great way to finish that. Yep. Okay. I think Greg has made it pretty clear that though an important tool, one must go above and beyond the rules to establish a comprehensive safety and health management system integrated into the business. Regardless of the size of the operation, all will benefit from these approaches. So I'd like to thank Greg Zagulis of Sixth Sense Safety Solutions. He can be reached at, would you guess, GZ at SixthSenseSafetySolutions.com. If you have any questions about this podcast, the Michigan Safety Conference, or would you like to be a guest or sponsor one of our podcasts, information can be found on our website at MICH SafetyConference.org. Thank you for listening to Safety Spectrum. This is Sheila Ide.